You're listening to The Point. More and more people are keeping chickens. The endeavor typically begins with a desire for fresh eggs, but many people soon realize chickens can provide much more than a good breakfast omelet. Talk with people who have chickens, and it's not uncommon to find out they've formed close bonds with their flock and enjoy spending time observing their behaviors, vocalizations, and interactions. Melissa Coffey has written two books about her flock. The latest is titled How to Speak Chicken. We wanted to meet Melissa's chickens and hear her interpretation of their vocalizations, so we stopped by on a cold morning earlier this month. Her coop is in a fenced grassy area on her property just off Route 6A in Barnstable. What got you interested in a flock of chickens at home?
Well, I don't know. I've always been one to not be afraid to try new things. So I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be neat to possibly have chickens? It was just from driving around town in Barnstable and on the Cape that I, you know, started seeing chickens in everybody's backyards. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So I started researching them in gardening magazines that, you know, when you're trying to get through those winter doldrums and you just get inspiration looking at beautiful gardens. And I started seeing chickens in the magazines and I thought, is this something I could really do? So actually, I took a leap of faith in 2010 and ordered 6 little baby chicks in the mail. Of all things, they came from the post office, and that's how our journey began. I tell a lot of friends that it's easier than a puppy, easier than a cat, and the best thing about keeping chickens when you have younger children is that they put themselves to bed. There's no arguing.
So even before you started to write the book, you were spending a lot of time with the birds, feeding them, tending to the coop, collecting eggs. And you write that while doing those tasks, you found yourself first talking to them and then mimicking them. So what did you begin to notice about their calls?
Well, I guess it's just like the maternal instinct kind of kicks in, and you know, or any type of pet owner, you want to know what your pet is thinking and get inside their mind and their brain and what they're saying. And in chickens, it's the little clucks and coos that you're hearing. And as you watch them and observe them, you just can't help yourself but wondering, what in the world are they trying to say to each other, and what are they communicating about?
Let's take a look at the chicken, shall we? What a great little fenced-in area.
Thank you. Oh, bup, bup. You gonna say hello? That's chickenese for hello. Bup, bup. Bup, bup. Bup, bup. Come on. Bup, bup. Come on. It's all right. Come on. That's my name. There you go. That's my name.
So the ones that are inside, are they afraid or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Saying, who are these strange people?
They're wondering, who are these people? Come on. This is my oldest girl. Come on.
She's pretty.
That's Fifi. She's a silky, one of the, she's a silky bantam, so most likely the type of chicken that Marco Polo described. His visit to Asia. She's a Chinese chicken. She's very fluffy. And she's almost 8. Hi, Fifi.
What are the other kinds of chickens that you have?
Well, some of them appear naked because they're molting, and then they're pretty rumpless and featherless, like poor Olive over there, who's a barred rock. And we've got Easter. Oh, God bless you. Oh, God bless you. You okay? That's a chicken sneeze. That is an Easter egger. This is Fluffy here, and here's our other Easter egger, and they, as you would think, lay Easter egg colored eggs, so blues and greens and pinks. We also have an Australorp over here, which is an Australian breed. That's Molly, and she's got a beautiful green iridescence on her black feathers. And then we have some bantam buff brahmas. There's 2 sizes of chickens. So we've got bantams, which are half the size of a standard chicken. So these are buff brahmas. And one of them's the mean girl, but don't tell her. she's a bully, but you know what? She's tiny, so the other ones just kind of say, are you kidding me?
You mentioned the hierarchy. Is mobility possible, or is it always the same?
Oh, no. I think, well, who wouldn't want to be head hen? I think that there's always some changeover, and mostly I notice that as the flock ages. The head hen sometimes step down with aging. The sentinel, the lookout, will be replaced with a younger gal who wants to kind of take up that position. And certainly having, this is our third flock of chickens since we got started. Chickens live on average 5 to 7 years. So you see that changeover. You also see the pecking order get reestablished anytime you take a chicken out of the flock. If a chicken passes away, or you realize you have too many and you want to share some with friends that also keep chickens. And the other time it changes is when you're introducing birds. Do you hear something? Well, this is the predator call. They might stop in their tracks. See them all look up like that? They say, Mom, what are you doing? Trying to fake us out? But they looked. And that's all that matters. And they'll do that predator kind of low rumbling growl to say, hey, look up, I see something. And the tone of that rumble, that brrr, changes whether it's a predator from the sky or from the ground. But they're doing chicken things right now. They like to free range in the grass and scratch and look for bugs and all kinds of fun things here in the backyard. And sometimes they stick together and sometimes they don't. And their cuddles just said, this is my spot. Don't come over here. Sometimes they're territorial like that too. Do you want me to go grab one? Okay.
Okay. Oh, good idea. What is she saying as you picked her up there?
She said, I really don't think I want to be picked up today. I think she was just saying, I'm not sure about this.
Now, the chicks have different vocalizations from the adult chicken. So what are some of the typical calls, and what are they communicating?
So when they're baby chicks, they're basically communicating if they're comfortable, if they're too hot, if they're too cold. They'll communicate fear. They'll communicate, contentment and pleasure. And, you know, they'll also wander around and introduce, you know, when I introduce new little things to the coop, like if I put in a tiny little mealworm or something small, little treat or something, some cracked corn, of course they'll alert that, oh, look at this, ooh, check this out. And then of course, the older chickens, they communicate everything. They talk about predators and communicating to one another their needs, where they should go, where they're located, things like that.
So aside from the vocalizations, what other ways do they communicate?
Oh gosh, like us. You'll see different body language used by the chickens. They use eye contact sometimes. And you just really have to watch them. And I'm so excited that you're here today to see what this flock is up to.
What do we know about the intelligence of chickens?
Well, I don't know. I think being a bird brain might actually be a compliment. It's pretty amazing that the size of their brain is able to do so many wonderful things. And I think the thing that fascinated me most when I was researching the book was that they can delete things out of their brain that they don't feel they need to hold on to, and they can rebuild their brain and rebuild how their memory works and determine if something is noteworthy to keep or not. It's pretty fascinating, and this idea of birds being able to regenerate portions of their brain is really, you know, scientists think that that's going to maybe help us to cure modern diseases of humans, like depression, Alzheimer's, even recovering from stroke. It's something that we can't do, but birds can.
All right, so let's talk about roosters.
People
have strong opinions about them, and often negative ones. Why do roosters get such a bad rap?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to just say, and I'm laughing as I say it, and it's really not because I think it's funny, but it's just kind of just amazing that everybody seems to have a story of a rooster chasing them as a child, and they were somehow terrorized by chickens, and I think, oh my gosh, these poor people. So roosters are really amazing, but you know, certainly roosters need about 7 to 12 hens for their own to be comfortable. Sometimes roosters will be over amorous to one or two particular hens. Roosters are very chivalrous. They're very romantic. They keep after their flock. They protect them. They look out for threats. And you know, sometimes you'll notice when you keep a flock of chickens that the hens will go into a submissive squat. And that is a squat for mating. It's also a squat that they'll do when people come by to pick them up or things of that nature. And sometimes I believe that roosters mistake you for wanting to mate with their hens when you're actually going to pick them up. If a hen goes into that squat, it's almost as if she's giving you permission. Mm-hmm. And I think the rooster is interpreting that sometimes as, not with my girl, you don't. So I think that you have to pay attention to the type of rooster you have. Some roosters are mean. Some are the most lovable, sweetest little guys you ever want to meet. Every bird, including chickens, everything has a personality. And, you know, there's some jerk humans too out there, and jerk chickens. And I mean, the Caribbean kind too, I guess. But, you know, you think about it, they just runs a spectrum, just as we would with other humans that we coexist with in our community. It's the same with chickens. There's always a mean girl. There's always a bully. It just, like life unfurls in the coop.
So how do the roosters protect the flock?
So the roosters will protect the flock. They're always, first of all, roosters are not in the pecking order. They're outside of the pecking order. And the pecking order is exclusive to the hens. So they are the end all be all. They are the ones that have the final say. And the roosters, if they perceive threat, they will actually round up their girls and put them in a safe place under a bush back in the chicken coop, and they'll come out to fight against that predator. They will even come over. Sometimes I have people that email me, you won't believe what my rooster did last night. He came and knocked on my sliding glass door in the back to tell me I didn't lock them up yet or that someone is missing or someone's in trouble. So they're very, very protective in that sense.
You mentioned about the hens will squat, you know, when they're, you know, ready for mating. But what about the courtship behavior of the rooster? How do the roosters try to woo the hens?
Oh, they're very romantic. This is part of the chicken TV that I love to watch out here. I tell the kids, oh, they're so bored, there's nothing to do. I say, go out and watch some chicken TV. So we let them out. And you can just watch the roosters be so incredibly chivalrous. I mean, there is a whole courtship that goes on with the backyard chickens. And the rooster will do this kind of dance called tidbitting, where he'll puff himself up and drag a wing on the ground, and he'll move his combs and wattles, the fleshy red part on his head and under his chin, and kind of shake those around. Apparently, you know, those are indicators of how attractive a rooster is to a hen. And he'll just do this thing where he picks up little treats. He won't necessarily eat them, but he'll call to her and say, look at what I have over here. I've got this delicious little morsel that I want to share with you. And there's this whole romantic notion that goes on. Sometimes they'll fake the girls out, though, and sometimes they'll do this dance and pretend they have a morsel, and they really won't have anything. So they're kind of sly. And some vocalizations go with it, but when they did the research on flocks that had multiple roosters, some of them do silent tidbitting, where they don't even have to make a sound, and they can secretly seduce hens to come over into their neck of the woods for a little intermingling.
You mentioned there's always a mean girl or chickens that bully. So is it possible to change bullying or bad behavior in the flock?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. You know, it's really tough. Sometimes people will put chickens that are misbehaving into a timeout, so a separate enclosure where they can still see the flock, but can't do any harm. I don't know. I think that it's really tough. Sometimes it's just about disrupting the pecking order, and sometimes it's just about personality. Mm-hmm. And I talk about Dottie Speckles in the book and how she was a mean girl. you know, I think there's something just inherent with chickens. I think people are different, of course.
You include some amazing facts about chickens in your book. One is that a hen's earlobe color will determine what color egg she'll lay. First, where does one find a hen's earlobe?
Well, I could show you that. They don't have necessarily the pinnacle on our ears like we have, the external part of the ear. So their ear is a hole in the side of their head that is covered with a sweet little tuft of feathers, so you wouldn't necessarily notice that. But if you look on the side of the head, below where an ear would be, you see a small part of flesh, and that is red or blue sometimes, or white. And sometimes it's a little bit more pronounced on certain breeds of chickens or certain chickens, but and some of them are just so beautiful. But it looks like the same material as fleshy part as a comb or a wattle.
Most people keep chickens for the eggs, of course. So what are the benefits of allowing fertilized eggs to hatch?
Well, I think it's really neat because it's a miracle of life, really. And watching that unfurl, I think learning about the dedication of the mother hen sitting in this zen-like broody state for 21 days, only coming off the nest once every 24 hours to go to the bathroom and eat and drink, and then right back to those eggs. And she is, you know, tending to them, turning them, talking to them, clucking to them, cooing to them, ripping all the feathers out of her chest to make a nest in addition to whatever else she can find, and just incubating those eggs. And for children to watch that process, also the process that life is never promised. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing that we have it. And to see that sometimes all the eggs don't hatch out, and watching the mother hen hope that maybe. That's why when the clutch of eggs hatches from under the hen, the clutch being the eggs that she's sitting on, she'll stay on that clutch for like 3 days total after the first ones hatch out, just to make sure. That's why those new baby chicks that hatch out early, they don't need to eat or drink for 72 hours. They're still surviving on a little bit of the yolk that they've ingested prior to hatching.
Wow. If you have a rooster in your flock, can you assume that all of your eggs will be fertilized?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Those roosters are busy.
And any hen that has been mated, is any egg that she lays will be fertile for 4 days following. So she and roosters typically will mate with the hens multiple times per day. So definitely they're fertile. So it's not a problem to eat an egg that is fertilized. You wouldn't know it. Simply just once you have the eggs, you want to be sure to collect them frequently, not let the hens sit on them, and refrigerate them promptly.
Listeners with chickens might be interested in observing their flocks more closely. So what advice do you have for observing the flock?
Well, I think you have to catch them in their natural moment. So I wouldn't necessarily bring treats out or anything like that to encourage them to interact with you. It's about watching them first and listening to the vocalizations that come with the movements, come with the situation that's happening, and certainly being quiet, not being a distraction. I wouldn't have the family dog out. I wouldn't have any strangers over if you're just trying to kind of understand what your chickens are all about. And just observing, you know, being the quiet one that just kind of sits there and watch. And then, of course, you know, later get out some treats and goodies for those chickens, like dried mealworms or sunflower seeds, and then see how they interact with you and listen to what they're saying when you call them.
Chickens are not good flyers. Is this due to domestication, or have they just always been poor flyers?
You know, in the research that I did for the book, there was some research that they could mostly just fly up to reach the trees, the branches on the trees, to roost at night. And that's where, if you were to have a flock of chickens, and in fact, like guinea hens are sometimes kept with chickens, and they will roost, they prefer to still roost in the trees. And if you had a backyard flock, you'd find them in the tree branches. So if you ever have a missing chicken, go out with a flashlight and look at the lower branches on the trees, because technically you'll probably find her there. They haven't needed the flying to be, you know, adapt to survive. They can fly in short little spurts, about 6 feet tall, maybe 20 feet, 25 feet, but that's about it. Enough to just hop off the ground to safety.
Do they ever try to hop out of this fenced-in area here?
No.
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 They've got it made. They don't want to go anywhere.
Well, there's too many goodies in here. But, you know, you can never say never with chickens. I think sometimes, you know, the grass might be greener over there. But so far, so good.
Melissa Cahy's latest book is How to Speak Chicken. To see images from our visit with her flock and for more information about her book, visit our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.